From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm The Miracle Hunter. Just this past week, we celebrated the Solemnity of the Immaculate Conception. That's always the big event each year that focuses on Mary. And of course, Our Lady of Guadalupe, that feast day is upon us as well. So a big week for Mary. And we're going to be focusing on Mary today when we talk with Donna Marie Cooper O'Boyle. You all know her as an author from EWTN and on EWTN television. And her new book is Our Life, Our Sweetness, and Our Hope, Jubilee Pilgrims of Hope with Mary. And that's a book that that I endorsed as well. So excited to see that one hitting the presses now from Marian Press. People can go to shopmercy.org. And exciting news came out this week. There have been 70 miracles related to Lourdes, perhaps 7,000 remarkable cures throughout history that have been acknowledged in some way as being beyond what was expected. But only 70 have been declared official miracles by the Lourdes Medical Bureau, or the local bishop giving his sign of approval. And we have number 71 just this past week. Early in the morning on Tuesday, I heard the news that they had announced this at Lourdes. You can go to the Lourdes website, the official website, to find out about the 71st Lourdes miracle. And so we'll be talking today with Dr. Alessandro De Franciscis, who's the head of the Lourdes Medical Bureau. He'll be talking to us about the details of this miracle and how miracles get approved in Lourdes. You can check out my series, They Might Be Saints, which airs every Wednesday at 8 a.m. Central Time. And you can also check out my other series, Explore with the Miracle Hunter. And Paris is the next episode, where I travel to Paris, where the Virgin Mary appeared to St. Catherine Laboure in the year 1830, resulting in the most famous and widespread Catholic medal in circulation. Of course, the Miraculous Medal. So check that one out, Explore with the Miracle Hunter Paris. And those programs air every Saturday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. You can check out Explore with the Miracle Hunter. Later in the show, we're going to be looking at the Might Be Saint of the Day. For today's day, we've got Blessed Giovanna Lambertini, and she's from Italy, of course, and 365 Days with Mary Project. Today's Marian devotion is also from Italy, the Blessed Virgin of Patronage from Faenza in Italy in the year 1685. And the question of the week, just how are Lourdes miracles actually approved anyway? And the miracle of the day are the Marian apparitions from Warak El Hadar in Egypt in the year 2009. Let's take a look at the miracle news. We do this every week where we talk about the miracles happening around the world and those things that relate to miracles. And as I mentioned in the opening of the show, there have been only 70 miracles at Lourdes that have been validated up until this point. But this week, the 71st miracle was officially declared at Lourdes. And that was the miracle recipient was a man named John Trainer. And the Sanctuary of Our Lady of Lourdes hosts the official posthumous proclamation of the 71st miracle of Lourdes. You can go to that website, the official Lourdes website, to get that proclamation. There's a PDF on there. And the Most Reverend Malcolm McMahon, the Archbishop of Liverpool, he released this statement, and it is the healing of John Jack Trainer, who was seriously wounded during the First World War, which occurred in Lourdes in 1923 on the occasion of the first pilgrimage on the Diocese of Liverpool. This was a soldier miraculously healed from war wounds in 1923. And he was born in Liverpool in 1883 to an Irish mother, and he joined the Royal Navy at the start of the First World War. He was first wounded on October 8, 1914, near Antwerp in Belgium, and he was hit by machine gun fire on May 8, 1915, during the Battle of Gallipoli, which is in Turkey. And he had many operations, which all failed. He lost the use of his right arm, but he refused amputation, and he had several seizures due to epilepsy. In 1920, a Liverpool surgeon attempted to cure epilepsy by trepanation, resulting in partial paralysis of both his legs, and his condition was such that at the beginning of the summer of 1923, he was designated for the Hospice for the Incurable, and he entered there in 1923. And that is from the recovery report of the Bureau of Medical Observations there in Lourdes. And in July 1923, he went to Lourdes on the occasion of the first pilgrimage of the Archdiocese of Liverpool to the sanctuary there. And he recovered on July 25th after being immersed in the pools of the sanctuary and then taking part in the Eucharistic procession and the blessing of the sick. And that same day, the doctors accompanying the pilgrimage noted his condition, and he left Lourdes the next day. And he went to the Bureau of Medical Observations on July 7, 1926, to declare his recovery. And he returned to Lourdes every year as a stretcher-bearer until 1939. And he was a member of the Liverpool Stretcher-Bearer Association, and he lived in the UK, and that was the first British Catholic to be cured in Lourdes. He died on December 8, 1943, of a completely different condition. And this miracle was officially recognized in the year 2024, this past week, and it was proclaimed a whole century after his cure. Fascinating that they waited so long for that one, but that is the latest one, number 71, in the list of Lourdes miracles. Now let's take a look at Catholic Pub Trivia. We do this every week. We ask a trivia question and give out a prize for an emailer that writes in with the fastest with the correct answer. And we're going to keep the topic on Lourdes this week. And last week, we talked about the Litany of Laredo. And we asked the question, during the Feast of the Immaculate Heart of Mary in 2020, Pope Francis added three invocations to this great list of Marian titles. And so what were the three titles that Pope Francis added? And they were the Mother of Mercy, the Mother of Hope, and the Solace of Immigrants. And so those were the three titles added by Pope Francis: Mother of Mercy, Mother of Hope, and Solace of Migrants. Those are the three titles added by Pope Francis. And now that is where it currently stands today. So thanks, everybody, who wrote in with that answer. And the question for this week relates to Lourdes. We asked the question, how many people have been official Lourdes cures from English-speaking countries? Again, we have that number at 71 now. The man from Liverpool, who was just declared the 71st miracle. But how many total people have ever been from an English-speaking country that received a miracle at Lourdes? If you think you know that answer, why win the prize? The image of the faces of Mary. Send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com, and maybe you'll be winning that prize, and the answers and winners will be posted on the show page of miraclehunter.com. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Donna Marie Cooper O'Boyle about her brand new book, Our Life, Our Sweetness, and Our Hope, Jubilee Pilgrims of Hope with Mary. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Well, this past week, we just celebrated the Solemnity of the Immaculate Conception. So this is the perfect time of year to put our focus on Mary. And there's a great new book that's out that I really encourage people to check out. It's called Our Life, Our Sweetness, and Our Hope, Jubilee Pilgrims of Hope with Mary, and it's out from Marian Press. People can go to shopmercy.org, and the author of that book is one of our favorite guests, and that's Donna Marie Cooper O'Boyle. Welcome back to the program today, Donna Marie.
Thank you so much, Michael. You're very kind, and it's wonderful to join you again.
Now, I always love books about Mary, and I'm so grateful for all your work, and this is a new one that's come out that I've taken particular interest in, and I'm so excited that you've done this with Marian Press. It's a beautiful new book that's just hot off the presses, so I encourage people who are turning their attention to Mary during this Christmas season and beyond to take a look at this book. Now, let's talk a little bit about it. You call it Our Life, Our Sweetness, and Our Hope, and it's for Jubilee Pilgrims of Hope, and of course, we have the big Jubilee of 2025 coming up, so the book is very timely for that.
Yeah. Well, Marian Press had asked me if I would write a book for the great Jubilee Year of Hope on hope and on the Blessed Mother. And so, wow, of course I wanted to do that because I love her so much and wanted to, of course, provide something that would be hopeful and, you know, help people, you know, pilgrimaging through this world. It's just a crazy world, as we all know. I don't have to try to convince anybody of that. And, you know, we need that hope. And so I was so happy to take this on. And, you know, every book, I'm sure you know, Michael, is a pilgrimage, is a journey. And just so much happens, even in the writing of the book, so many graces and blessings and even crazy challenges and things to try to get in the way of the writing. But, you know, lots of compelling stories just unfolded that have to do with the apparitions and the titles of Mary. And
that's right.
Anyway, so not to go on about that, but I'm just so happy to do this.
And I think, of course, that's what particularly caught my attention with this book, is that, of course, I love all books that relate to Mary and that help my Marian devotion and love of Mary. But this one pays a special attention to some of the apparitions of Mary, some of her most famous cases, the most highly approved cases in history. And you have chapters dedicated to Our Lady of Guadalupe, who's my favorite, and the Miraculous Medal, who you've written books about before, and Our Lady of Lourdes and Cabejo, and also Częstochowa. I'm a Polish guy behind the Irish O apostrophe, so I love her as well.
Me too, I'm Polish.
Yep, and then Our Lady of Knock, of course, from Ireland, I love that, and Our Lady of Champion, which is a short drive from where I live, and I've been there many times, to that beautiful shrine here in the United States dedicated to an apparition of Mary. So you have, and Fatima is the final chapter. So you touch on some of these very highly approved cases of Marian apparitions that have seen the Church's approval. And of course, we're in a new era of Church approval. They no longer give approval as supernatural to Marian apparitions. So these are the classics. These are the greatest of all time that you have, that the Church has fully recognized in this way as supernatural events. So talk to us a little bit about how you decided with each chapter to how to focus on those aspects of Mary.
Yeah, thank you for asking. And it's, you know, I really wanted to even include more titles of Mary. I did cover some of the, you know, the approved apparitions and but it was so hard because I had a lot of titles, too, that I wanted to cover. And, of course, I couldn't cover everything because the book would be too big and less doable for the pilgrim, you know, for this coming year or for any time. So I prayed and I just chose certain ones that I thought would resonate with the reader, that would help the reader. And the first four chapters, of course, are on Mary's life, you know, to give us that good backdrop, that good solid foundation, that background. So the first one is the hope of Mary's fiat. The second is the hope of Mary's visit. The third, the hope of Mary's instruction. You know, do whatever he tells you. And four, hope does not die, about the sword of sorrow and Mary at the foot of the cross. We go through her life, and I set the tone there, and then I move into, you know, the one after that, you love, Our Lady of Guadalupe, hope displayed on cactus cloth, you know, so how that how amazing, and that's at this time of year as well. And so then I move into, you know, these apparitions and also titles, you know, a little bit, just as much as I could fit in the book, actually. And then I end with a private, or personal rather, pilgrimage of hope that just unfolded for me during the writing of the book when my brother died, and I pilgrimaged to Ireland to be there when he was put to rest, and I went to Knock once again, and so I have, you know, have that at the end of the book. Plus, I put a lot of wonderful prayers in the afterword, and I encourage the readers at the end of each chapter, you know, to, I give specific suggestions, but, you know, they're free to use those prayers anytime. So I try to, you know, offer as much as I can, plus Church teaching, all woven throughout, and using saints and popes and wonderful people that can help to guide us too, to Mary, you know, Mary who leads us to her son Jesus. So there's a lot packed in here, and I encourage the reader to savor it. You know, don't have to rush through it, just read it, savor it, and ponder it. And I try to also give them at the end of each chapter, you know, some elements. There are three elements. One is an action, you know, suggestions for what they can do related to that particular chapter, a prayer section, suggested prayers, and a savor section where they could write their own notes. There are lines there, and they could write their own prayer or thought or resolution or reflection. So then it becomes kind of a keepsake book, too, to look back upon and see, aha, you know, I made that resolution. Did I carry it out? Or, you know, whatever you might, some lights, you know, possibly the Holy Spirit is touching your heart and you write something. You're in adoration with the book and you feel our Lord is telling you something, or the Blessed Mother is guiding you to do something or consoling you, whatever it may be. And you can just jot it down. So it becomes very personal.
That's beautiful. And we're talking today with Donna Marie Cooper O'Boyle, talking about her brand new book, Our Life, Our Sweetness, and Our Hope, Jubilee Pilgrims of Hope with Mary. And this is a perfect timing as we enter the Jubilee year here in our church, and of course, keeping our focus on Mary during this time of the Immaculate Conception. And, when it comes to miracles, this is of great interest of me, and you pick some of the great miraculous moments for Mary, you know, all these Marian apparitions and Our Lady of Częstochowa, a miraculous image, you might say. What is it about these titles? Of course, we have Our Lady of the Litany of Loretto and other titles of Mary throughout history that popes and saints and otherwise the faithful have always reflected on for Mary. But these titles of Mary, as they relate to the great miracles of Mary, they really draw the faithful in, and they capture people's interest in a special way. What was it about tying these to the great miracle moments of Mary?
Wow, that's a great question. Kind of wish I had more time to think about that one, but it's exactly what you just said. You know, it draws us in. And these miracles and titles and are just so amazing. We really can't recount them as well as, I mean, we won't know everything until we get to heaven, but we do have a lot of information now that we can ponder and we can share and grow closer to Jesus ultimately through this wonderful love of Mother Mary, who wants all of her children in heaven one day. And she didn't just, you know, go up there and then rest on a comfy cloud and take a nap after all the work of her co-redemption with her son Jesus. She is still working so hard from heaven, you know, as a mediatrix of grace, distributing graces to us, praying for us, interceding for us, and perfecting our prayers even. You know, St. Louis de Montfort tells us that she's the surest, most perfect way to Jesus, and she perfects our prayers even. So, you know, I encourage the reader to take Mary along. Of course, she's there already, but to invite her to your visits to Jesus in the Blessed Sacrament, to invite her to Mass, to invite her into your life more fully, and get to know her more. And I'm hoping that through this book, readers will get to know her more and you know, get closer and closer to Jesus.
Absolutely. We've been talking today with Donna Marie Cooper O'Boyle about her brand new book, Our Life, Our Sweetness, and Our Hope, Jubilee Pilgrims of Hope with Mary. And it's out from Marian Press. People can go to shopmercy.org. Tell us a little bit as we wrap up the interview today, Donna Marie, for people who want to read this book or learn more about it, what's the best place for people to go?
Well, definitely, yes. Shop Mercy is Marian Press's place, and it's right there. It's available. I have copies available through my website. I'll autograph them and send them out with a Blessed Miraculous Medal. And I'm sure it will be eventually on the EWTN Religious Catalog and many other places. But it's just right hot off the press. So you can definitely get it from Shop Mercy or from my website. And they're definitely available there right now.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Donna Marie Cooper O'Boyle, for putting together this great book that ties the apparitions and great miracles of Mary to these great moments of hope that we search for in our own lives of faith.
Thank you
so much for joining us on today's program.
Thank you so much, Michael, for having me, and thank you for your beautiful endorsement and all the work that you do, because you've got so many resources through the Miracle Hunter. People can check that out because there's just so much there. So thank you for all that you do.
Thank you so much. And this has been Donna Marie Cooper O'Boyle joining me today talking about her new book, Our Life, Our Sweetness, and Our Hope. You can find that one through Marian Press. Go to shopmercy.org. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be looking at the question of the week. What are the criteria for a Lord's miracle? Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Hey, I love getting your questions. People write in from around the world about questions happening in today's world and those that have happened centuries ago. And I'd like to answer questions in person when I can. And of course, that's when I'm giving a talk. I give presentations at maybe 20 different places around the United States. You might find me at a parish or a conference or some other event where I speak about miracles. And during this past year, I've spoken a lot about Eucharistic miracles, of course, in conjunction with the Eucharistic revival from the U.S. Bishops Conference. And so after I give a talk, I usually answer questions. Sometimes it's for 5 minutes, sometimes 15, 20 minutes. People have lots of questions. And I love hearing what people are thinking about. So for people who want to invite me to their parish, you can go to my website and you can click on the contact tab at miraclehunter.com and send me a message. And maybe I'll be speaking at a parish in your area sometime soon. So let's take a look at this week's question of the week. This week's question comes from Steve. Steve asks, Dear Miracle Hunter, what are the criteria for a Lord's miracle? Thank you, Steve. This is an older question that we're reviving to kind of connect with this week's show, where we talk about this new miracle from Lourdes, number 71. And so in the declaration of a miracle, and you can go to the Lourdes website, the official Lourdes website for this information as well. And in the declaration of the miracle, there are four decisive steps. There's a permanent doctor from the Medical Bureau of Lourdes, and his name is Dr. Alessandro De Franciscus. He's been in charge of this mission since 2009, and he receives people who wish to declare a cure. If he considers the case to be serious and worthy of further investigation, he'll call in his fellow doctors and who will present at Lourdes on that day and who have been registered their presence at the Medical Bureau of the sanctuary. And if the doctors collectively decide to continue the investigation, the cure is subject to a long research process, which may last several years, and at the end of which the members of the CAMIL, which is the International Lourdes Medical Commission, they vote if the cure is, quote, unexplained in the present state of our knowledge, end quote. And the result of the CAMIL vote is then reported to the bishop of the cured person's place of residence, and it's then up to the bishop, the representative of the church hierarchy, and he decides whether to declare it a miracle or not. And so the doctors work in the voting, they look at a set of seven criteria. First, the disease must be serious with an unfavorable prognosis. Secondly, the disease must be known and recorded by medicine. Third, the disease must be organic. That is to say, there must be objective biological, radiological criteria, everything that currently exists in medicine. That means that even today, we will not recognize cures of pathologies without precise objective criteria, such as psychological, psychiatric, functional, nervous diseases, etc. Doesn't mean that these diseases cannot be cured, but according to the criteria of the church, they cannot be recognized as miracles in the current state of things. Fourth, there must be not have been any treatment to which the cure had been attributed. Of course, if there had been treatment, we would say that's not a miracle, or the miracle is God working through the hands of a doctor. But in the cases where treatment's been applied, they don't consider those, or effective treatment anyway. The fifth criteria is the timing of the cure itself. The recovery must be sudden, instantaneous, immediate, and without convalescence. And finally, the cure, there are two additional criteria. It must simply not be a regression of symptoms, but a return of all vital functions. And finally, it must not be simply a remission of but a cure, so lasting and definitive. So according to the Lord's website, those are all the criteria that add up to a Lord's miracle. If you have a question for the Miracle Hunter, you can send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com. and maybe we'll be reading your question on the air next week. Let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary project. We do this every week where we look at the Marian devotion of the day as it lines up exactly to the day of the week, of the year. And there are these stories of Marian devotion from all around the world. So the devotion for the day, December 14th, is the Blessed Virgin of Patronage from Faenza in Italy in the year 1685. The story goes that a wealthy family from Forli donated an image of the Virgin and Child to a convent church, and the painting was installed in its new marble shrine on the last Sunday of September in the year 1650. The beginning of public veneration of the Virgin of Defense was commemorated with an annual feast on that day. In the night of November 20, 1685, a fire in the convent laundry room jumped to the parlor and then the sacristy, but the flames ceased at the point of entry to the chapel with the sacred image. Public devotion to the Blessed Virgin of Defense, later Vatican approved officially in 1721, grew following this miracle. On December 14, 1954, in commemoration of today's date, the icon of the Virgin was crowned with the gold of the nuns' rings they had received at their solemn procession. And that is the Blessed Virgin of Patronage from Faenza in Italy in the year 1685. For more information on this fascinating devotion or any of the hundreds of other Marian devotions from around the world, you can go to the website, 365dayswithmary.com. You can pick up the book. You can download the free app from the iOS App Store, or you can connect to the Facebook page and join any of 10,000 other followers who get a new title of Mary each and every day in the 365 Days with Mary project. Let's take a look at the miracle of the day. We do this every week where we talk about a miracle happening at some point in Christian history that lines up exactly to the day's date. And so for today's date, we've got the apparitions that occurred in Warak al-Hadar in Egypt in the year 2009. And it's said that the Holy Virgin appeared in her full height in luminous robes above the middle of a dome of a church in a pure white dress and a royal blue belt. She had a crown on her head, above which appeared the cross on the top of a dome, and the crosses on the top of the church's domes and towers glowed brightly with light. Huge crowds gathered in the vicinity of the church, and they saw luminous white pigeons soaring above the church during various times of the night, as well as a star which emerges suddenly in the night, traveling some 200 meters across, then disappearing. And there were no messages given at these apparitions that were reported. And so there was an approval that was given, and this is a Coptic Orthodox apparition. So this has never been officially investigated or approved by Rome, but the Pope Shenouda and Anba Damatius, the Archbishop of Giza, they announced in 2009 that the Holy Virgin had appeared in a transfiguration at a church named for her in Warak al-Hadar in Giza in the hours of Friday, the 11th of December in 2009. And this approval that came through from the Orthodox Church, the Coptic Orthodox Church, was signed on December 14th and therefore is our miracle of the day. Let's take a look at sainthood news. We always track the people on the path to sainthood. We're talking about servants of God, venerables, blesseds, before they have all their miracles and are declared saints. And this lines up with my television series, They Might Be Saints, which airs on EWTN every Wednesday at 8 a.m. Central Time. And there was news that came out this week about an African-American priest who is now on the road to sainthood. His name is Father Martin Maria de Porres Ward. And according to the Black Catholic Messenger, the cause for beatification and canonization of Father Martin de Porres Maria Ward has received Vatican approval. The quote is, as of July 1st, we received notice through the Brazilian Historical Commission that we have official approval from the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints. We're now in the process of working on putting together the final copy of the Positio, that is the academic position paper, for the Dicastery for the Cause of Saints. And this marks a first important step as the Vatican needs to approve a cause for canonization before it can ever even be reviewed. So it's now up to the Diocese of São João de Rei to provide the Vatican with a complete biography of Father Ward's life. And the Vatican will then review the biography and determine if he lived a life of heroic virtue, after which he would be declared venerable. And so this is the latest American on the path to sainthood. And he's revered as a uniquely holy figure in Brazil, where he worked for more than four decades as a missionary, teacher, pastor, vocations promoter, spiritual director, and chaplain. He was christened a citizen in 1995, an honor named after the municipality of Southeast Brazil, where he worked for most of his priesthood. And 4 years later, he suffered a series of heart attacks and died at the age of 81. And he is born was from Boston's Charleston neighborhood, and so he is now considered a servant of God, and he's one of seven African Americans who are now on the path to sainthood. So that is today's news item, that we have a new African American priest who is on the road to sainthood. Let's take a look at They Might Be Saints, the Might Be Saint of the Day. We do this every week, where we talk about someone on the path to sainthood whose death anniversary or feast day lines up exactly to the day's date. For today's day, we've got Blessed Giovanna Lambertini. Her memorial or feast day is December 14th, and that's today. And she was born to nobility in a wealthy and powerful family. Giovanna felt a call to religious life and left the worldly one behind to become a poor Clare nun. And she was a spiritual student one of 16 companions of St. Catherine of Bologna, who helped found the Corpus Domini Monastery. And she was a vicar of the Poor Clare House in Ferrara in Italy. And she was the vicar of the house in Bologna. And one of St. Catherine's visions showed Giovanna sitting beside her in paradise. That is a pretty good vision for someone to have a saint. That's a pretty good reason to consider somebody on the path to sainthood. In my opinion, we have the vision of St. Catherine seeing her in heaven. And that is Blessed Giovanna Lambertini. She died in the year 1476 with one more miracle. Blessed Giovanna will go on to become St. Giovanna. And she's today's Might Be Saint of the Day. And for people who want to check out my television series, They Might Be Saints, you can go to EWTN and watch every Wednesday at 8 a.m. Central Time. We have a different American on the path to sainthood that we feature as part of the series. And people can pick up the book, They Might Be Saints, which is available from EWTNRC.com that has a chapter dedicated to each of the Americans on the path to sainthood and goes over the sainthood process as well. And this is my best book. You can get it at EWTN.com. For more information. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Dr. Alessandro De... We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Dr. Alessandro De Franciscis from the Lord's Medical Bureau about the new 71st miracle that was just announced. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill on the Miracle Hunter. People may have tuned into my program on EWTN television, which was Miracles of Lourdes, where we examined the cases of Lourdes that have been approved as supernatural or authentic healings, you might say, validated by the Lourdes Medical Commission and then given a statement by a local bishop, perhaps. And so for some years, we've been sitting on the number 70. That's been sort of the number of all those cases that have been fully recognized at Lourdes. Many thousands otherwise have been examined and considered, but the number was 70. That changed this past week. We heard the announcement that number 71 has been officially recognized from Lourdes, and that was to a man, John Traynor, the first English-speaking recipient of Lourdes miracles. So for all of us in the United States and otherwise, it's fun to have somebody speaking our language who was recognized. But the head of that medical bureau there in Lourdes, and of course, if you watch that program, Miracles of Lourdes, or he's been on my show before, and that is Dr. Alessandro De Franciscis. He is here today joining us to talk about this big announcement of the 71st miracle. Welcome to back to the program, Dr. Alessandro.
Thank you for calling me, and nice to hear you and all listeners. Greetings from the other side of the Atlantic.
Wonderful. Well, it's exciting to have you on because you, of all people, have been there for many years and have examined these cases, and we've been sitting on the number 70, the Sister Bernadette Morillot case was the last recognized, and now we're at number 71. What can you tell us about this John Jack Traynor?
Well, this 71st cure recognized as miraculous is really a surprise, because it was only in 2023, in the occasion of the centennial of the first pilgrimage of the Archdiocese of Liverpool in England to Lourdes, 1923. And in 2023, and the centennial, I was asked by a number of people from that part of England, how come in the past it had been turned down, the recognition of the miracle of John Traynor? And it came out that indeed Lourdes had not turned it back, but actually had done all his homework. You see, the so-called Lourdes International Medical Committee, which is now the, I would say, the court of appeal of our cases from a strictly medical point of view, was created only in 1954 by the Bishop of Tarbes and Lourdes, Monsignor Tess. So until then, the only institution that dealt with alleged cures in Lourdes was the Bureau de Constatation Médicale, the Lourdes Office of Medical Observation. In 1923, the Archdiocese of Liverpool organized its first pilgrimage ever to Lourdes, and of course it brought with them also sick people. And among the sick people, there is a severely wounded, handicapped, veteran soldier, John Traynor. He had been hit during World War I, between 1915 and 1918, by he was shot in his head, and his skull had been perforated. And from that wound, a number of issues came down. He had epilepsy with very severe seizures, quite often during the day. He had a total paralysis of his upper right limb, his upper right arm. He had hemiplegia, which means he couldn't move the lower part of his body, and so forth. This severe ex-soldier, now veteran, was also operated once. We are talking in the early 20s of the 20th century. So we are talking of surgical and medical conditions quite different from today's everyday medicine. And not only he did not get any better, but actually got even worse. So when this first pilgrimage to Lourdes was organized, John Traynor was brought as one of the most severe sick people that came on that pilgrimage. And there were, of course, in the pilgrimage, not only helpers, organizers, and volunteers, but there were also a number of doctors. And these three doctors are with the pilgrimage, testified that Traynor was severely ill and sick as he arrived in Lourdes, and only a few hours, and even more the day after, he had gone to the bath at the next to the grotto Lourdes. He was basically reestablished completely to his original good health, which was quite extraordinary, very extraordinary. So the pilgrimage goes back to Liverpool in northern England, and immediately the fame of this cure starts diffusing among the very simple people, the everyday Christians, and the local community, and most of northern England, and also Ireland, because John Traynor's mother was Irish. Mm. So the fame of this cure has always been considered as miraculous, the big miracle of John Traynor. When I joined the medical office as the residing physician in 2009, I remember that among the written and imprinted publications we gave to newcomers, young doctors or doctors that came for the first time to the medical office, we would give, among others, also the story of the cure of John Traynor. But he was never been recognized as a miracle. So, as I said, and then in 2023, there's the first centennial of this extraordinary cure and of the pilgrimage of the Diocese to Lourdes. And the curiosity, of course, grows. And Dr. Kieran Moriarty, a colleague of mine, older than me, he was a very devout pilgrim to Lourdes, and his parents had always talked to him from the region of Liverpool of this extraordinary cure. So both him and I said, but why don't we try to understand how come for 100 years there has been no judgment on the side of the Diocese of Liverpool of this cure? And so we did, and it actually was him that discovered a key, although only in it was only actually a symptom. Then we did it together, because he found in the archives of the Archdiocese of Liverpool, which are annexed to the Metropolitan Cathedral of Liverpool, he found in a certain file that there was a very ruined and sort of unreadable piece of a sort of old-time photocopy of a journal. And he brings it to me in Lourdes on his next pilgrimage, and he says, Lissandro, look, I saw this, what do you think? And you know what I do? I discover that there was, we both discovered together, if you wish, that was a little small piece of the reproduction of the front page of a journal called Le Journal de la Grotte. Le Journal de la Grotte, the Grotto's journal, it was the official journal of the Sanctuary of Lourdes and of the Bureau de Constatation Médicale, the Office of Medical Observation, and is dated end of 1926, and the entire story is in it. The article is signed by Dr. Auguste Vallée. He was, at the time, the chair of the medical office. He is one of my predecessors. I'm the 15th. And when John Traynor came back to Lourdes in 1926, he had fully recovered, we said, in 1923. And now he had been in absolutely good conditions for 3 years, not only, but he went back to work. He started having children. He had been married even before, but he had no children before the wound before the war. He starts having children. He grows his family, and he is very strong, very, very robust man. But he becomes also very much engaged in the pilgrimage, in the local hospitality, the organization in the church, in the diocese that takes care of pilgrimages, and always very much engaged in charitable work. So an outspoken Catholic that is very, very, thankful to our Blessed Mother for his complete recovery. He comes back to Lourdes, I said, in 1926. He submits himself to the Bureau de Constatation Médicale. Dr. Vallée calls a collegial meeting in which the local doctors and the three doctors that had come to Lourdes 3 years before, which are able to witness on their word, on their honor, the dramatic and severe conditions of Traynor in 23 and the incredible instantaneous recovery that he had 3 years before. Dr. Vallée puts all of this in a very long report, which I can send you if you're interested. If any of your listeners are interested, I can send you the PDF. And he signs it, recognizing this with his colleague, the doctor at the time, as a inexplicable cure, a prodigious cure. That's it. End of 1926. Now, you know what? But nobody ever sent this written and published report to the Archdiocese of Liverpool. So the only thing that we did, basically, Dr. Moriarty and me, was to live, as I've seen in some movies and televisions, called Cold Case. We rebuilt the case and all the documentation that we found in Lourdes and sent it to my bishop, Monsignor Jean-Marc Mica, the Bishop of Tarbes, which wrote a letter to the Archbishop of Liverpool telling him what I just told now you and your listeners, that this story had been fully reported to Lourdes in due time, had been examined in a collegial way. Doctors were, you know, free to ask or doubt, and they collegially recognized this as being an absolutely inexplicable cure, not only, but they were present in Lourdes on their second pilgrimage to Lourdes, also the doctors, they were witnesses at the time. And now, Bishop of Lourdes sends this information, we are more or less in the beginning of August of 2024, to the Archbishop of Lourdes, as we have, has always been done. It is the bishop of the cured person, as you said very well in your introduction, that recognizes a cure unexplained by current medical knowledge being, for him, the bishop of that cured person, a miracle. And then we didn't know what happened. And then, to my total surprise, I was invited by email by the Vicar General of the Diocese of Liverpool, as well as my colleague and friend, Dr. Moriarty, to witness. I was asked to witness at a canonical committee convened by the Archbishop of Liverpool on November 29th, only a few days ago. Actually, I was traveling, and I stopped, as I did today, next to a good Wi-Fi system in order to connect with Liverpool. And I answered the questions that canonical committee asked me, and Dr. Moriarty presented instead a full report on the story. He did it very well during the years. And so the result was at the end that we, of course, were told nothing at all. And then on the first week of December, like about 4 or 5 days after this canonical committee met, Archbishop Malcolm McMahon came out with his formal statement on the cure of John Traynor, which for him, bishop of that diocese, had the value of a miracle. And so he recognized this extraordinary cure of a man affected by, as we said, epilepsy, paralysis, and hemiplegia. It happened instantaneously in Lourdes in 1923. For him, bishop being a miracle. This is why it is now added to our list, and it makes the 71st miraculous cure. And by the way, because you are now an old friend, you and your listeners, the fourth during my tenure, which I am very, very grateful to our Blessed Mother.
Well, congratulations on number four. That's wonderful that you connected the dots and got that report where it needed to be and reinvestigated the case, the cold case, as you might say. That's wonderful to hear this news of number 71. It's always a big deal anytime a miracle is recognized at Lourdes. We've been talking today with Dr. Alessandro De Franciscus, the head of the Lourdes Medical Bureau. And listeners are probably wondering the question, are there any other similar cases that fall into this time period, perhaps that allowed this one to maybe slip through the cracks or otherwise? Are there other ones that are worth reinvestigating at this point?
Let me put it this way. If you go on the internet and you look for the complete list of the 70 miracles, because this one has not yet been published on our internet site, website, you're going to notice that a miraculous cure is recognized always in connection with some pastoral or church event. Archbishop of Liverpool last week, for instance, wanted to have his statement read on the Feast of the Immaculate Conception, mm-hmm. December 8th. What I'm saying is there is always, and the same thing happens in Lourdes. You see, when the Bishop of the Apparitions recognized the apparitions as true, the bishop recognized, we have now in 1862, I'm talking, apparitions 1858, 1862, he also recognized among the tens and tens of people that allegedly were cured, seven cures being for him, Bishop, a miracle. Mm-hmm. So the apparitions are recognized with, on the same day, we're now in January of 1862, seven miraculous cures. Then there's nothing else. But of course, sick people and pilgrims keep going to Lourdes. We now reach 1908. It is the year of the 50th anniversary of the apparition. And on the year of the 50th anniversary of the apparitions, 1908, there is a number of bishops that think that the best way to give honor to our Blessed Mother is to recognize one of the cures that had been studied by the collegial method of the Bureau de Constatation Médicale being a miracle. And so between 1908 in 1912, there are 33 bishops that say that, which brings the list in 1912 to 40 miraculous cures in Lourdes. And then in 1915, World War I, then the world ends. This is the time of the cure of Trainer that comes to Lourdes in 1923. Nothing is known in Lourdes. We have to wait the 50s of the 20th century to start having new cures being recognized as miraculous. And you must know that Cure 41 and Cure 42 are more or less around the date of Trainer, which I thought was a tremendous and absolutely objective element that confirmed the total authenticity of the story of John Trainer, because Lourdes at the time had no procedures, had no... Today we have a very clarified procedure. We know exactly when to notify the bishop of the cure person and so forth. But at the time, no. So we can say with absolute, and I can affirm with absolute certainty, as the Archbishop of Liverpool did himself, that this story had never been reported. The judgment on the case of Trainer had not been reported back to Liverpool, and the proof is that Miracle 41 and Miracle 42 is the same. They were cures of the 20s and early 30s of the 20th century, but then they're recognized only 10 years after the end of World War II. So now I can answer fully to your question. Are there any cold cases? There could be cases that have been, how can I say, forgotten. But then what will be the reason? In our case, John Trainer's, the 71st miracle, is because on the 100th anniversary of that first pilgrimage, the question arose among the faithful, the chaplain, Dr. Moriarty, and myself, what about this story which was so famous of John Trainer? But at the moment, I have no other story which goes back in time that could become a cold case.
Truly, truly fascinating. We're so grateful to you, Dr. Alessandro De Franciscus, for joining us again on this program, talking to us about this great news, the announcement of the 71st Miracle of Lourdes. I know many people who have a devotion to Our Lady of Lourdes and otherwise, and who are fascinated by your process over there and the miracles that are recognized, are so excited with this big news of number 71 being announced. Thank you so much, Doctor, for joining us on today's program.
Well, thank you for calling, and as you know, I'll be always open to answer any questions at any given time in the future.
Thank you. God bless. And that was Dr. Alessandro De Franciscus from the Lourdes Medical Bureau. So exciting, this news, and we're so grateful to him for shedding some light on this incredible story that has come to us from some time ago. And that's all the time we have for today's show. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to ewtn.com/radio, check out the audio archives, or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank our guest today, Donna Marie Cooper O'Boyle, talking to us about her new book, Our Life, Our Sweetness, and Our Hope, and also Dr. Alessandro De Franciscus from the Lourdes Medical Bureau. Check out my series, Explore with the Miracle Hunter. I traveled to Paris, where the Virgin Mary appeared to St. Catherine Laboure in 1830, resulting in the most famous and widespread Catholic medal in circulation, the Miraculous Medal. And I'd like to thank you for joining me today on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt. Talk to you next week.